Chapter 5. The Sabbath Written by the Finger of God. When the voice of the Holy One had ceased, the people stood afar off, and Moses drew near unto the thick darkness where God was. A brief interview follows, in which God gives to Moses a series of precepts, which, as a sample of the statutes given through him, may be classified thus: ceremonial precepts, pointing to the good things to come; judicial precepts, intended for the civil government of the nation; and moral precepts, stating anew in other forms the Ten Commandments. In this brief interview, the Sabbath is not forgotten. 6 days thou shalt do thy work, and on the seventh day thou shalt rest, that thine ox and thine ass may rest, and the son of thy handmaid and the stranger may be refreshed. This scripture furnishes incidental proof that the Sabbath was made for mankind and for those creatures that share the labors of man. The stranger and the foreigner must keep it, and was for their refreshment. But the same persons could not partake of the Passover until they were made members of the Hebrew church by circumcision. When Moses had returned unto the people, he repeated all the words of the Lord. With one voice all the people exclaim, "All the words which the Lord hath said will we do." Then Moses wrote all the words of the Lord, and he took the book of the covenant and read in the audience of the people, and they said, "All that the Lord hath said will we do, and be obedient." Then Moses sprinkled both the book and all the people, saying, "This is the blood of the testament which God hath enjoined unto you." The way was thus prepared for God to bestow a second signal honor upon his law. And the Lord said unto Moses, "Come up to me in the mount, and be there. And I will give thee tables of stone, and a law, and commandments which I have written, that thou mayest teach them." And Moses went up into the mount, and a cloud covered the mount. And the glory of the Lord abode upon Mount Sinai. And the cloud covered it 6 days. And the seventh day he called unto Moses out of the midst of the cloud. And the sight of the glory of the Lord was like devouring fire on the top of the mount in the eyes of the children of Israel. And Moses went into the midst of the cloud, and gat him up into the mount. And Moses was in the mount 40 days and 40 nights. During this 40 days, God gave to Moses a pattern of the ark in which to place the law that he had written upon stone, and of the mercy seat to place over that law, and of the sanctuary in which to deposit the ark. He also ordained the priesthood, which was to minister in the sanctuary before the ark. These things being ordained, and the lawgiver about to commit his law as written by himself into the hands of Moses, he again enjoins the Sabbath. And the Lord spake unto Moses, saying, "Speak thou also unto the children of Israel, saying, Verily my Sabbaths shall you keep. For it is a sign between me and you throughout your generations, that you may know that I am the Lord that doth sanctify you. You shall keep the Sabbath, therefore, for it is holy unto you. Every one that defileth it shall surely be put to death. For whosoever doth any work therein, that soul shall be cut off from among his people. 6 days may work be done, but in the seventh is the Sabbath of rest, holy to the Lord. Whosoever doeth any work in the Sabbath day, he shall surely be put to death. Wherefore the children of Israel shall keep the Sabbath, to observe the Sabbath throughout their generations for a perpetual covenant. It is a sign between me and the children of Israel forever, for in 6 days the Lord made heaven and earth, and on the seventh day he rested and was refreshed. And he gave unto Moses, when he had made an end of communing with him upon Sinai, 2 tables of testimony, tables of stone written with the finger of God. This should be compared with the testimony of Ezekiel, speaking in the name of God. "I gave them my statutes, and showed them my judgments, which if a man do, he shall even live in them. Moreover also I gave them my Sabbaths, to be a sign between me and them, that they might know that I am the Lord that sanctify them. I am the Lord your God. Walk in my statutes and keep my judgments and do them and hallow my Sabbaths, and they shall be a sign between me and you, that you may know that I am the Lord your God. It will be observed that neither of these scriptures teach that the Sabbath was made for Israel, nor yet do they teach that it was made after the Hebrews came out of Egypt. In neither of these particulars do they even seem to contradict those texts that place the institution of the Sabbath at creation. But we do learn, number one, that it was God's act of giving to the Hebrews his Sabbath that made it a sign between them and himself. I gave them my Sabbaths to be a sign between me and them. This act of committing to them the Sabbath has been noticed already. Number two, that it was to be a sign between God and the Hebrews that they might know that I am the Lord that sanctify them. Wherever the word Lord in the Old Testament is in small capitals, as in the texts under consideration, it is in the Hebrew Jehovah. The Sabbath, then, as a sign, signified that it was Jehovah, i.e., the infinite, self-existent God, who had sanctified them. To sanctify is to separate, set apart, or appoint to a holy, sacred, or religious use. That the Hebrew nation had thus been set apart in the most remarkable manner from all mankind was sufficiently evident. But who was it that had thus separated them from all other people? As a gracious answer to this important question, God gave to the Hebrews his own hallowed rest day. But how could the great memorial of the Creator determine such a question? Listen to the words of the Most High. Verily my Sabbaths, i.e. my rest days, you shall keep, for it is a sign between me and you. It is a sign between me and the children of Israel forever. For in 6 days the Lord made heaven and earth, and on the seventh day he rested and was refreshed. The Sabbath, as a sign between God and Israel, was a perpetual testimony that he who had separated them from all mankind as his peculiar treasure in the earth was that being who had created the heavens and the earth in 6 days and rested on the seventh. It was therefore the strongest possible assurance that he who sanctified them was indeed Jehovah. From the days of Abraham, God had set apart the Hebrews. He who had previously borne no local, national, or family name did from that time until the end of his covenant relation with the Hebrew race take to himself such titles as seemed to show him to be their God alone. From his choice of Abraham and his family forward, he designates himself as the God of Abraham, of Isaac, and of Jacob, the God of the Hebrews, and the God of Israel. He brought Israel out of Egypt to be their God, and at Sinai did join himself to them in solemn espousal. He did thus set apart or sanctify unto himself the Hebrews, because that all other nations had given themselves to idolatry. Thus the God of heaven and earth condescended to give himself to a single race and to set them apart from all mankind. It should be observed that it was not the Sabbath which had set Israel apart from all other nations, but it was the idolatry of all other nations that caused God to set the Hebrews apart for himself, and that God gave to Israel the Sabbath which he had hallowed for mankind at creation as the most expressive sign that he who thus sanctified them was indeed the living God. It was the act of God in giving his Sabbath to the Israelites that rendered it a sign between them and himself. But the Sabbath did not derive its existence from being thus given to the Hebrews, for it was the ancient Sabbath of the Lord when given to them, and we have seen that it was not given by a new commandment. On the contrary, it rested at that time upon existing obligation. But it was the providence of God in behalf of the Hebrews, first in rescuing them from abject servitude, and second, in sending them bread from heaven for 6 days and preserving food for the Sabbath, that constituted the Sabbath a gift to that people. And mark the significance of the manner in which this gift was bestowed as showing who it was that sanctified them. It became a gift to the Hebrews by the wonderful providence of the manna, a miracle that ceased not openly to declare the Sabbath every week for the space of 40 years, thus showing incontrovertibly that he who led them was the author of the Sabbath, and therefore the creator of heaven and earth. That the Sabbath which was made for man should thus be given to the Hebrews is certainly not more remarkable than that the God of the whole earth should give his oracles and himself to that people. The Most High and his law and Sabbath did not become Jewish, but the Hebrews were made the honored depositaries of divine truth, and the knowledge of God and of his commandments was preserved in the earth. The reason on which this sign is based points unmistakably to the true origin of the Sabbath. It did not originate from the fall of the manna for 6 days and its cessation on the seventh, for the manna was given thus because the Sabbath was in existence, but because that in 6 days the Lord made heaven and earth, and on the seventh day he rested and was refreshed. Thus the Sabbath is shown to have originated with the rest and refreshment of the Creator, and not at the fall of the manna. As an institution, the Sabbath declared its author to be the creator of heaven and earth. As a sign between God and Israel, it declared that he who had set them apart was indeed Jehovah. The last act of the lawgiver in this memorable interview was to place in the hands of Moses the 2 tables of testimony, tables of stone written with the finger of God. Then he revealed to Moses the sad apostasy of the people of Israel and hastened him down to them. And Moses turned and went down from the mount, and the 2 tables of the testimony were in his hand. The tables were written on both their sides, on the one side and on the other were they written. And the tables were the work of God, and the writing was the writing of God, graven upon the tables. And it came to pass, as soon as he came nigh unto the camp, that he saw the calf and the dancing. And Moses' anger waxed hot, and he cast the tables out of his hands and brake them beneath the mount. Then Moses inflicted retribution upon the idolaters, and there fell of the people that day about 3,000 men. And Moses returned unto God and interceded in behalf of the people. Then God promised that his angel should go with them, but that he himself would not go up in their midst, lest he should consume them. Then Moses presented an earnest supplication to the Most High that he might see his glory. This petition was granted, saving that the face of God should not be seen. But before Moses ascended that he might behold the majesty of the infinite lawgiver, the Lord said unto him, Hew thee 2 tables of stone like unto the first, and I will write upon these tables the words that were in the 1 tables which thou breakest. And he hewed 2 tables of stone like unto the first. And Moses rose up early in the morning and went up unto Mount Sinai, as the Lord had commanded him, and took in his hand the 2 tables of stone. And the Lord descended in the cloud and stood with him there and proclaimed the name of the Lord, and the Lord passed by before him. Then Moses beheld the glory of the Lord, and he made haste and bowed his head toward the earth and worshipped. This interview lasted 40 days and 40 nights, as did the first, and seems to have been spent by Moses in intercession that God would not destroy the people for their sin. The record of this period is very brief, but in this record the Sabbath is mentioned. 6 days thou shalt work, but on the seventh day thou shalt rest. In earing time and in harvest thou shalt rest. thus admonishing them not to forget in their busiest season the Sabbath of the Lord. This second period of 40 days ends like the first, with the act of God in placing the tables of stone in the hands of Moses. And he was there with the Lord 40 days and 40 nights. He did neither eat bread nor drink water. And he wrote upon the tables the words of the covenant, the Ten Commandments. Thus it appears that the tables of testimony were two tables of stone with the commandments written upon them by the finger of God. Thus the testimony of God is shown to be the Ten Commandments. The writing on the second tables was an exact copy of that on the first. Hew thee two tables of stone like unto the first, and I will write, said God, upon these tables the words that were in the first tables which thou breakest. And of the first tables, Moses says, He declared unto you his covenant, which he commanded you to perform, even Ten Commandments, and he wrote them upon two tables of stone. Thus did God commit to his people the Ten Commandments. Without human or angelic agency, he proclaimed them himself. And not trusting his most honored servant Moses or even an angel of his presence, himself wrote them with his own finger. Remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy is one of the 10 words thus honored by the Most High. Nor are these two high honors the only ones conferred upon this precept. While it shares them in common with the other 9 commandments, it stands in advance of them in that it is established by the example of the lawgiver himself. These precepts were given upon two tables with evident reference to the twofold division of the law of God, supreme love to God and the love of our neighbor as ourselves. The Sabbath commandment, placed at the close of the first table, forms the golden clasp that binds together both divisions of the moral law. It guards and enforces that day which God claims as his. It follows man through the 6 days which God has given him to be properly spent in the various relations of life, thus extending over the whole of human life, and embracing in its loan of 6 days to man all the duties of the second table, while itself belonging to the first. That these 10 commandments form a complete code of moral law is proved by the language of the lawgiver when he called Moses up to himself to receive them. Come up to me into the mount and be there, and I will give thee tables of stone and a law and commandments which I have written. This law and commandments was the testimony of God engraven upon stone. The same great fact is presented by Moses in his blessing pronounced upon Israel. And he said, The Lord came from Sinai and rose up from Seir unto them. He shined forth from Mount Paran, and he came with 10,000s of saints. From his right hand went a fiery law for them. There can be no dispute that in this language the Most High is represented as personally present with 10,000s of his holy ones or angels. And that which he wrote with his own right hand is called by Moses a fiery law, or as the margin has it, a fire of law. And now the man of God completes his sacred trust, and thus he rehearses what God did in committing his law to him and what he himself did in its final disposition. And he wrote on the tables, according to the first writing, the 10 commandments, which the Lord spake unto you in the mount out of the midst of the fire in the day of the assembly. And the Lord gave them unto me. And I turned myself and came down from the mount and put the tables in the ark which I had made. And there they be, as the Lord commanded me. Thus was the law of God deposited in the ark beneath the mercy seat. Nor should this chapter close without pointing out the important relation of the fourth commandment to the atonement. The top of the ark was called the mercy seat, because all those who had broken the law contained in the ark beneath the mercy seat could find pardon by the sprinkling of the blood of atonement upon it. The law within the ark was that which demanded an atonement. The ceremonial law, which ordained the Levitical priesthood and the sacrifices for sin, was that which taught men how the atonement could be made. The broken law was beneath the mercy seat. The blood of sin offering was sprinkled upon its top, and pardon was extended to the penitent sinner. There was actual sin, and hence a real law which man had broken. But there was not a real atonement, and hence the need of the great antitype to the Levitical sacrifices. The real atonement, when it is made, must relate to that law respecting which an atonement had been shadowed forth. In other words, the shadowy atonement related to that law which was shut up in the ark, indicating that a real atonement was demanded by that law. It is necessary that the law which demands atonement, in order that its transgressor may be spared, should itself be perfect, else the fault would in part at least rest with the lawgiver and not wholly with the sinner. Hence, the atonement, when made, does not take away the broken law, for that is perfect, but is expressly designed to take away the guilt of the transgressor. Let it be remembered, then, that the fourth commandment is one of the 10 precepts of God's broken law, one of the immutable holy principles that made the death of God's only Son necessary before pardon could be extended to guilty man. These facts being borne in mind, it will not be thought strange that the lawgiver should reserve the proclamation of such a law to himself, and that he should entrust to no created being the writing of that law which should demand as its atonement the death of the Son of God.